B-Pod Studios.
How about this guy?
Comic books, video games, anime, sci-fi. If you've been made fun of for it, we're probably going to talk about it.
One question. Is it too late to change the name?
Nerd Radio starts now.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's Nerd Radio as part of the B-Pod Studios Network on the podcast page over at WRIF.com. I am your longtime host, Chuck Bean, and I'm joined by my prisoner, I mean co-host, Al Beck.
I've never agreed with something you said on this podcast more than that. You know, the easy way to get to the podcast page at WRIF.com, you can say all that.
Right.
Or NerdRadio101.com.
Sure.
We'll just take you directly to all the backlog of our podcast right there.
Right, exactly.
And if you want to watch us live on Twitch, of course, you can always go to robleifeldfeet.com. We are over at robleifeldfeet.com. And since Chuck always likes to mispronounce it, I like to spell it. Make sure you know what it is. Rob, R-O-B, Liefeld, L-I-E-F-E-L-D.
They know how to spell Rob.
Feet, F-E-E-T dot C-O-M. That's dot com.
You put that pause in on purpose so I would think I was out of the woods.
Nice.
Also, we are joined by
RobLiefeld.com.
My wife and also
I'm actually gonna produce a thing. It's gonna be like Nerd Radio brought to you by RobLiefeld.com.
If you do that though, you're going to have to pay for another year.
Oh, that's fine. That would be worth it.
Already halfway through this one. We're also joined by my wife, Amy.
Hi.
Welcome back to the show. Always
sure
a pleasure.
Be sure to put robleifeldfeet.com in the chat.
Thank you for being helpful.
Liefeld.
See, I'm getting it from him.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You've been poisoned by your husband. Liefeld.
It's not the first time.
We're already on the rails.
Also, we are joined by somebody who joined us about a month ago.
Yes,
Marcus.
Yes. Hey,
welcome
I'm
back to the
again,
show.
Back again. Ready to talk some chop it up about some nerd stuff and maybe some Stranger Things.
And new friend of the show. Named after a famous wrestler.
Yeah.
Scott
He's
Hall.
Coming.
Absolutely. Yeah. It blew my mind the first time we met. I was like, wait, really?
Yeah, I knew.
Really?
I'm like, yeah.
You walk around and say, ayo.
I do. I'm oozing machismo as much as possible.
Absolutely. Welcome to the show,
Rest
Scott.
Thank you.
Rest
right? Didn't we lose Scott Hall?
Yeah. He did pass away last year. So
unfortunately.
So we've got the only living Scott Hall at this point.
So far.
So far.
That we know of. That's quite a bold claim.
No, I made sure.
Nerd Radio, the home of the only living Scott Hall.
I'm here.
I went like,
and I'm still
like,
alive so far.
Like Arnold and the Terminator. I went through the phone book.
Yeah.
Made sure that I would be able to make that claim. So, Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What brings you here is not the right question.
What the fuck are you doing here?
I wandered in. I was sleeping here.
Security!
You guys woke me up.
That's what I want to know. Who are these other people?
You're on Nerd Radio. Why? What kind of nerd stuff are you into that you were like, man, I want to be on Nerd Radio?
Lot. I mean, literally anything you guys talk about, I'm probably into at least 5% in some way.
Excellent.
Star Wars, Star Trek. My current favorite thing is, Dungeons and Dragons, Warhammer, painting,
nice.
Stuff like that. I'm an artist by trade, so.
Excellent. And, yeah, that's something that we actually discussed before you came on the show is that you said you're into painting miniatures, painting Warhammer and D&D miniatures, which is something I dabbled in a little bit when I tried playing D&D and realized I can't do. Like, putting the little dab of paint on the toothpick and trying to get it just right. It's like, no, this does not work for me.
First, you want to use a brush probably more than a toothpick.
Maybe.
Paint the whole thing.
Maybe. But I could tell, even with a toothpick, I could watch my hand look like I was Michael J. Fox. And yeah. I was like, this is not going to work.
Right. Ironically, I actually started only a couple of years ago back in. I mean, I was into it like when I was in high school.
Sure.
You know, I started up. Back then, it was lead. Lead miniatures.
Yeah,
scary lead until
right.
A lawsuit in New York of some kid swallowing it changed all of that.
Well, yeah, that's how the DM used to let you know that your character was dead is you just pop the miniature in his mouth.
Eat it, right.
And,
but I stopped doing it for a while.
I have to interrupt for a moment with a breaking news update.
Okay.
That we have lost two viewers on Twitch. We are
Oh, gosh. James is not here.
Wow.
Damn.
All right.
Yeah. Come on, I'm his cool as Scott Hall's here.
Yeah.
I can tell dick jokes.
You can.
We're down to six. And I would like to point out that one of those six is me. Because I'm signed in over here to monitor. So.
Also me. I'm in here, too.
All right.
But Infernus Mustard is here.
Oh, my God. There's four people watching us. Oh, my God.
Right.
Oh, wow, this is...
I can't wait to do a raid after this with our four people on.
My God. Oh, my God. We're up to nine.
Thank you, Infernal Mustard. Thank you.
Okay. So anyway,
so miniature painting.
Back to you, the only living
Scott
Hall.
I started
Hall.
Back in it about 4 years ago. I went to this game store out in 96 called Imperium Games.
Okay.
My wife's like, hey, you know, it's your birthday. Why don't you get started again? And the next thing I know, I'm doing Twitch shows. I'm doing Instagram. I'm doing all that stuff.
So you paint miniatures on Twitch?
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. Where can people find that?
Studio 489. I believe I always forget if I did the number, if I spelled it out, but it's Studio 489.
Amy, look that up quickly so we can confirm.
You should have a little skull and
sure.
A little...
Sure. And you were telling me before we went on that like you actually... you don't do a lot of commissions, but you've actually got somebody that's like, hey, can you paint my Blood Bowl team for me?
Right. And I actually
sounds
was
like
doing...
you're making a pretty penny on that.
Well, yeah, it's nice to make the money back since you're putting so much in what they call gray plastic. You know?
Right.
So like, you just have this gray plastic pile of shame. That's the miniature joke is that you
yes.
have all this these games, board games and sets that you haven't painted because you're like, oh, I got to get the next set. Right. And so you get this next set and then you just. Throw another pile of plastic over there, and you're like, oh,
side
I'll
note, pile
eventually.
Of shame is also my street name.
There pile of shame, nice. Yeah.
But I saw that people. I actually went to the store one time, and I saw that someone had painted this beautiful miniature. It was something called a dreadnought, so it was really huge. And
sure.
I know the model itself costs about $150,
right.
just plain with nothing on it. You got to build it, you got to paint it, $150. They were selling it at the store painted by this beautiful job, and it was selling for $80. That's half of what you cost
what?
For it blank, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, this is crazy. So I'm going to start putting my stuff up on eBay and put it for what I think it should sell.
Right.
Like, it's never going to sell. All of a sudden, they started selling on eBay for the prices I was asking for. And I'm like, okay, maybe I don't even know if I need commissions, honestly. So
right.
I got a commission just recently, so I'm trying it to see if I even need it, honestly. But I may not even need it because most of the stuff I've been putting on, people want, depending on what it is.
That's
like,
cool.
Some stuff that's like more popular, like Dungeons & Dragons, they get into like dragons or a specific monster, like
yeah.
a beholder, which is this floating eyeball creature.
Yeah.
Those sell well. You know, so I don't have to, like, I don't know if I need it.
Right.
But
you got a pretty solid side hustle.
Well, the bonus is, like, I'm painting it how I want to paint it. You know, the commission you have, you're more
they
or less
want,
painting
yeah.
some specifics. Mm. But with the eBay, I'm just putting it on and selling it however I want. Other than the eBay cut out of the price, you know, that's the only difference between the commission. The commission, you're just straight money. But artistically, I can do whatever I want. I can paint whatever I want. And I can paint whatever miniatures I want and put them up, and I'm selling them.
Nice.
That is the artist's dream right there.
Yeah.
Like, you want to buy my art the way I did it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Now, when it comes to the miniatures that are selling...
It's almost like Amy knows what that's like.
Yeah.
She's got
quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, with the miniatures that you're selling on eBay, is it older stuff that does better, or is it newer stuff?
Well, people do like... I mean, they do like their...
Because I know
Space Marines, of course. Space
sure.
Marines is the hot thing always. So they love Space Marines. You paint a group of five of those guys and put them on there. They almost doesn't even matter what color they are. They'll probably pick them up. Because the kind of the fun thing that to get people into the game now is like you were talking how you had people at the game store that you worked at. They'd be there all day, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, now they have skirmish games like Kill Team and the game I was talking about before, Blood Bowl. These games can be done within an hour and a half.
That's cool.
So you can knock out five or six of these games and be done
yeah.
in a couple hours. But and you also don't need an entire, because you know, new people getting into the game are like, oh God, I got to paint how many miniatures?
Right.
A Kill Team, you only need, sometimes there's a crazy clowns, elf clowns called Harlequins.
Okay.
You need five of them.
Interesting.
That's it. And you can add, of course, to all these games.
And I'm sure
end up adding more.
It's cheaper to get like a squad of five clowns than it is to get, like you were saying, like
absolutely.
A dreadnought, a
30,
tank, and 30
on average,
marines or something.
$36 on average.
Right.
Five Harlequins. And then all you got to go straight on is painting that five. And then you got yourself, and you know, usually at the stores they have the stuff there. So if you know the Kill Team rules, you got a friend that's got the books or something, you just got to learn a little bit of rules and bam, you're out there playing.
Nice.
As opposed to having this, like, I don't even have, I've been painting for 4 years. I wouldn't say I even have what they call a 2,000 point army.
Okay.
After 4 years of painting, it's kind of a running joke, like, oh, I finally got my 2,000 point army.
They let you play if it's unpainted, right?
In tournaments, depending on what they are, you have to have what I think it's three colors.
Interesting.
Oh my god!
No, like, no color, no colors.
That's a big tournament or whatever. Yeah. Like at home tournaments, you could play with Legos if you want. You know,
I mean,
you go to the local store. Sometimes they'll play with Legos. Although
I do get it though. It's got to be like more than a couple colors. Because if it was me, I would just like dump it in a bucket of paint.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
There's actually some companies that kind of want you to do that. They have Army Painter has these dipping inks. You take your guy and you dip them in the ink, and that's what they're like. That's painted.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, okay.
That's what I would do.
Yeah. I could even paint like that. Jeez. Well, that's fascinating. It's interesting. And it's the kind of thing, like I told you before, I used to work at a game store, but I'm so far removed from it
right.
that, like, I remember these things, but I'm sure so much has changed.
Yeah.
Since the last time I knew anything about any of this stuff.
Well, like I was telling you before, I think it's things have and then things haven't. I wish more things have changed because, like, I go on my Instagram and I look at, like, how many people are following me, and, you know, it breaks up the demographics. I have like 3% women following me.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I don't think that's because my thing is designed to be anti-women or anything like that. I think it's the industry itself.
Sure.
There's not as many women into Warhammer.
And I would say that's probably almost the exact opposite when you look at Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
I'm sure that there
are. I mean, maybe not as much.
I'm sure it's a considerably larger audience of women who are into D&D than into Warhammer.
Right. I mean, there's that one, I think I want to say Sabine. She was a female adult film star who started, like, stopped doing
now
that.
Now you have my attention.
Right, there you go. And she started doing Dungeons & Dragons, and she's now, quote-unquote, the queen of Dungeons & Dragons, kind of like Joe Manganiello. I'm probably going to say his name
That's
wrong.
That's what we call James around here, the queen of Dungeons & Dragons.
That's a new one for me.
So her whole gaming group is just women.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely – you're not going to find too many of those groups in Warhammer, unfortunately.
Right.
But I think that, like, with Dungeons & Dragons, they noticed that by having that progressive attitude that also starts to get in celebrities.
Yes. Like, yeah, like for Warhammer specifically, the last year or so, you've heard that, like, Henry Cavill right. loves Warhammer.
So as they get more progressive, maybe more film stars will get interested, then they'll start getting more inclusive. Or
that'll be the next Batman versus Superman.
There you go.
Henry Cavill and Ben Affleck playing Warhammer.
They've been calling, like, all over Twitter. I know you said you're not much into the gaming industry right now, but all over Twitter, they are constantly... Well, he just visited them, actually.
Yeah.
He just went there and visited them. So they are constantly calling him out.
Yeah.
Constantly calling him out. Especially all the big deal YouTubers and stuff. They want him to be on their YouTubes.
I'm sure it's extremely tiring, too. It's like SummerSlam, WWE SummerSlam was a couple of weeks ago, and Kat Dennings had tweeted something out about, am I a WWE fan? And, like, immediately a bunch of people are all over Twitter about, like, oh, you should watch AEW instead, or, oh, this is better, or, oh, you should see this match.
Oh,
it's
my,
like,
God.
I just said I like the thing, man. Calm down.
And they're still doing it, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Yeah.
Well, it's exciting when you find out, like, your big hero is also into what you like.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Let alone it's Superman. The guy's biceps are the size of my head. So, I mean, it's unnatural to be, you're like, oh, this guy's a nerd?
Yeah.
That's the thing now. This person's a nerd?
Right. This person plays this video game or is into this thing, builds computers.
I know everyone was shocked when they found out I was a nerd.
Absolutely. No one expected.
So
all
huge,
of those
man.
Dozens and dozens of non-friends I had growing up were all shocked.
The kid that watched Dean Martin movies?
Yeah, Dean Martin.
Comic
and
books?
And, yeah.
What is this? Yeah. Well, it sounds like we've got a new tabletop friend.
Surprise!
To discuss stuff about. But we're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we're going to go around the table and find out what everyone's been doing. What you've been watching.
We're
going to
find out why Marcus is here next.
Oh, exactly.
Yes. Come on.
Absolutely.
Let's do it.
He was
what are you doing here?
Shooting me out. I'm just chilling.
He told me I had 5 minutes to get out.
Yeah. You stick around. We definitely you had a Facebook message a couple of weeks ago when you went and saw the Thor movie that I was like, oh, I want to know more about this. I want to know more about this. So we'll talk about that and more as Nerd Radio comes back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hope you've cleared out your DVR. Time for Nerd Radio.
Spoilers.
Make it so.
Welcome back to Nerd Radio. All over your social media at Nerd Radio 101. And live on Twitch, Wednesday afternoons, 11:30, RobLeifeldFeet.com.
Thank you.
Welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you. I feel like you didn't say it with enough gusto, though. So RobLeifeldFeet.com is where you can stream us live on Twitch. RobLeifeldFeet.com.
I'm waiting for that guy to find out this.
That we're doing this? Yeah. That this bit is I'll go on a tirade when I find out that he's listening. I will absolutely. I was showing Amy. There's a new Twitter where somebody is taking frames from famous comic books and Liefelding them so that they're drawn like him. And most of them so far are all from Watchmen.
Okay.
So it's like they'll give you the actual panel, and then you'll flip to the right and it'll be a panel where like Dr. Manhattan has a giant chest and they moved this piece of thing that was in the foreground so it's covering where his feet are and his face is stupid and
lots of pouches
brings me joy.
Is everything covered though, like, because we're talking about Dr. Manhattan? He likes
he's just a Ken doll down there. Rob Liefeld, if he can't draw feet, he has no idea how to draw genitals.
No,
there's no way that it works.
I want to see that. I want to see his version of that now.
Yeah, right. So we got a full studio. Of course, Al Beck is with me. Amy, Scott, and Marcus are all here. Let's go around the table and find out what's everyone been doing since the last time we discussed. We'll start with you, Marcus. We had you, we talked about Stranger Things, but the end hadn't come yet.
Yeah.
The last two episodes of that. You finished that, right?
Yes. I caught up, finished the ending of that, and, well, spoilers for anyone, because me and Amy are probably going to go spitball about this.
Sure.
But
you're fine at this point.
But it was pretty amazing.
It was good.
Wild ending. They definitely came up to what they were going to say, and we lost a character that we came to kind of love.
Yeah.
Two people. Kind of one you kind of hated, well, one you kind of loved. But Eddie Munson, sad to say, he went out in a grand finale. And he, you know, it was really interesting for his character to show that he went and helped the group when they were in dire need. Trying to pull off that ending, trying to kill Vecna.
And it's done great stuff for that actor, too.
He got
to jam with Metallica at Lollapalooza the other weekend.
Yeah, and there's been some drama surrounding him. I don't know if anyone's been looking pop culture-wise, but after his character got killed off in that final season, I guess a lot of people loved his character so much that they started making compilation videos from clips and putting it on TikTok. And I was kind of interested. I was like, what is going on here? And it was a lot of people talking about how hot he is and how hot the character is and how hot the actor Joseph Quinn is. And
there's a couple people I went to high school with that are like, where were you?
right.
And like, and this
looks like Marcus is following me on Twitter.
Yeah. You caught me. But it transcended so much to the point where he even caught the eye of Doja Cat. And this is where things get really interesting. So Doja Cat supposedly went to go and hit up his fellow actor, Noah.
She
messaged him to say, hey, could you give Joseph Quinn my contact? Now, I don't know what Doja Cat is doing. You don't have a publicist. You don't have anyone that can reach out and talk for you on your own behalf. Anyway, so Noah went, and being a 19-year-old, you know, he goes and he puts this out on social media. Like, look at what Doja Cat just sent me. You know, she's trying to get in contact with me, Joseph Quinn. And she went ballistic. She
went snake and everything. Yeah.
Can I say, though, screw her. Because let's...
What did you expect? Well, 19.
Let's right. really analyze what happened here, okay? So, like, you're one of the weird-looking kids from Stranger Things. Yep. You're 19 years old, and you get a message from Doja Cat, and you're like, hell yeah! And you look at it, she's like, everybody. Hey, oh my God, love the show. Can you give my number to your friend? You, bitch. Like, right? This is nerd right? radio. Is there anyone in this room who can't relate to that? Like, where a hot girl comes up to you and is like, what's your friend's name?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. For no, real. Screw her. For she real. Got what she deserves getting blasted on social media.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah. Never happened to me.
And also, to what you're saying, since she put it on there, does it maybe look like maybe she set it up just to start a bunch of spice out there?
Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah, you know, maybe, you know, but, you know, she hasn't been doing a lot lately. She recently... pulled off of Weekend's tour because of a vaping incident where she vaped too much and her vocal cords were destroyed, I guess.
Oh, Lord.
And so she had to pull out for two shows. Weekend said, nah, forget that, man. You're out for the rest of the whole thing.
Yeah, you're replaced.
Yeah, no, he didn't even replace her. He just took her name off the marquee and just continued the tour.
Wow. So, yeah, they ended up putting in, like, random people at each location.
Right.
Yeah. They moved Katajranda. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but they moved him to the Detroit show, but it seems like they're moving different people in those
right.
spots, just not one touring act.
Yeah,
I mean, like, and that's the silly thing too. Like, I think I've watched too much wrestling. I think everything is a work now.
Yeah.
So I'm with him on that. I feel like she was kind of trying to get some a little bit more notoriety.
Yes.
And right.
She got big on TikTok, so of course she's going to go on TikTok and she'll just sit there and talk about her business day in, day out.
Yeah,
so.
And that's the weird thing about Doja. She's very out there with everything that she does. And after that had happened, she got so much backlash from people saying, like, why are you messaging this 19-year-old,
sure.
all this stuff? And anyways, and so much to the point where she literally tweeted out some stuff and said, I'm done with all of y'all. I'm retiring. And that was it. So potentially Stranger Things might have made Doja Cat retired. That's what I mean.
All I can say is literally
she needs money.
Everything I know about Doja Cat has been covered in this discussion just now.
Sure. Right.
That's all you need to know.
And it's everything I know. And I don't like her. Just based on
just what you know
the,
now.
The information available to me
right.
is I don't care for her. So I'm glad. I'm glad Stranger Things ruined her life.
I thought you were going to bring up the convention, because like Quinn had like that problem at the convention, was apparently treating him really poorly.
Yeah, they were basically coming to his table because he was talking to every fan and being very
right.
caring and charismatic mm-hmm. about it, and they basically were like, we're not here to talk, chop chop, take
right.
the picture, get us our money. And somebody actually at the con, when they had a panel, went up and basically was like, I just wanted to say on behalf of all of us, like, we love you and I'm sorry that you're being treated poorly. And he broke down in tears.
Wow.
So,
wow.
like, it's been good and bad for him. I think it's a lot of exposure, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's like exposure can be very oversensitized at that point.
Yeah.
And he's like getting to hang out with Metallica and stuff like that, but it also comes with, you know, not having privacy, not
right.
having any of that mm-hmm. stuff, too.
I can't imagine at all the, like, comic book conventions and stuff that I've been to. I can't imagine the convention people talking to a celebrity, even the level of him,
mm-hmm.
in such a fashion that they'd be, like, mistreating it. It'd be like, what's that?
Do you remember which convention it was?
Let me look it up.
It was filled.
But, like C2E2 was this past weekend, and then, like, CM Punk was out there. I can't imagine them telling CM Punk, hey, you can't talk to everybody. You got to get through it. Be like, really?
Because
I'll never come back.
Well, that's the thing. It's like
London Comic Con, London Film and Comic Con.
Oh, the UK doesn't care about your feelings.
Yeah. And he's trying to defend them. He's like, I wasn't necessarily mistreated, but like obviously it emotionally impacted him. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not right, you know. And for his character, you know, his character was just this one season, and I mean, he really
That's the thing is that like this is his 15 minutes
because the
odds of them bringing him back. But at the same time, it's like anybody that's in one of these shows like Stranger Things, like now as fans, we're going to be looking for him.
Yeah.
If you see him in a trailer for something, you'll be like, oh, it's the guy that played Eddie Munson. I got to see that. I loved him as Eddie Munson.
Yeah. And so, and just to wrap it up on Stranger Things, it was just interesting to see at the end, that finale. There were several things I just want to point out real quick. We lost Billy Hargrove or whatever. I think, no, Hargrove. He was the basketball player.
No, that was Max's brother.
Max's brother. No.
Billy Hargrove is
Billy, Max's
brother.
Yeah, that was Max's brother.
Sorry. So
there's a basketball. I forget the basketball player's name, though.
Yeah, but he's almost like one of the villains of the season because he's hunting.
Almost felt like Billy in a way. But that final.
Jason Carver.
Yes. That final scene where he's breaking it up and he's trying to, you know, break up the Max, you know, little seance and everything. And that was very interesting. And sad to say, everything got torn apart. The city, I mean, everything that happened in the vision that was given to Nancy, all the cracks formed. And to see, you know, even if you were laying on that crack, your body literally would be separated. And that was scary to see. And then with Vecna, I think this was a great Michael Myers-esque flashback I had where he falls out the window like the last Halloween movie.
Sure.
Like how Michael Myers fell out on fire and everything. And then he's on the ground on fire. They look out. Okay, he's okay. But just like in Michael Myers, when they get outside and they look out, body's gone.
Yeah.
Burnt up ground there. So Vecna's still out there. And that's where you get really anticipated in that final scene where you're seeing Hawkins and you're looking at, I mean, helicopters coming over, burnt up buildings, buildings of fire and everything. You could tell that this next season is going to be, I mean, this part two finale is going to really wrap things up. And you're probably going to have some big battle in Hawkins.
This is the first season where it ends on a cliffhanger of end on a cliffhanger. But the cliffhanger is so big that it's like, well, they have to come back and explain this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I think they left everything, you know, pretty tied up well. And I think we're all feeling for Max. That was very sad at the end. I don't know, Amy, I know you had a real attached with Max, and that was, that hurt me where she was completely blind and couldn't see anything. I was just like, oh my gosh. I mean, for her.
I think it's the first time that like one of the kids has been really messed up at the end of the season
by the events
of what's happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like everything has been emotional up until this point. This is the first like real physical thing other than the mind flayer getting inside Elle's leg.
Yeah.
Which like that's a heal at that point. Once it's out, it's healed. But Max is been broken and blinded, and we'll see how much Elle's powers, because the only reason she's really alive at this point is because Elle kept her alive.
Yeah,
he found a way to keep her alive.
Yeah.
Well, so we'll see what changes from that point.
Well, I'm curious about Marcus's take on this. Just because he's clearly like, he watched that show and like got so many details out of it.
Yep.
So the last episode, I had finished Stranger Things, and I thought it was a good season. But my only two complaints were about those last two episodes that I thought that they were too long.
Mm.
And I thought that the show, for me anyway, lost momentum by pushing those last two episodes back a little bit. Like me and my girlfriend sat and watched those first, whatever, eight episodes or six, whatever it was.
Right.
And we were loving the season. And then it stopped. We couldn't wait for the last two. By the time the last two came out, they were long and I didn't care as much anymore. So I was wondering if, you know, was that just me, or did you feel a change in momentum by having to wait, or did you actually think it maybe sweetened the deal a little bit? So, since you loved it so much,
No,
I want to see what your take was on that.
I think they were balanced, but there were some scenes where they drug on a little bit long. A lot of the emotional attachments where I'm blanking on her name right now. The new
Robin.
Robin, yes. And when she actually gets with her love interest, well, doesn't really get with her, but like starts to talk with her. Felt like that scene was a little long played out. It was something that we were building up to, but it felt like there was someone, and this is just me personally, was watching Stranger Things. It feels like there's a producer or director that wants to get these personal notes in and stuff. And so there's some scenes that drag out real long and everything. But like the scene with like Will in the car where he's He's showing his painting and everything, and he's showing, you know, just how much he's worked on it and everything. But then he doesn't get the exact reaction back and everything. You could see, and what Amy brought up is that emotional where he's looking for that attachment with his friend still, that more bond, you know, more than just a friend, you know. And you could tell though his brother notices this, you know. But there were a lot of things where I think the emotional draws, they played it out from there and stuff. I feel like we could have had some more action in that final scene and stuff. You know, there were some people making jokes about Elle's fight scene with Vecna and everything, and how that was a little bit anticlimactic or whatever. You know, he was just talking about with her, just her hand out and stuff, and I understood that, but it was, I think we're building to something more, and I think the emotions where you're at right now, I think it left you in a vulnerable state where now this next season, if anything happens to any of these characters, which I think Elle is very vulnerable right now, we're going to be really emotionally drawn into it. So I think it was for a reason, but I agree with your point that it was a little bit too drawn out.
I think it felt a little bit like when you're watching like wrestling and a match comes up and you think it's like this is going to be the last match between the two guys, but it's not. So your anticipation is that like this is the banger, this is going to, and then it's like, no, these guys are going to fight again next month at a pay-per-view. So
I do find that, I mean, I don't know, I'm sometimes a little more of the opinion of like, okay, get to the point.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, Marcus obviously likes a beat, you know, like likes to soak it in a little bit. But like, it's just, to me, it seems like sometimes shows get so big that, you know, like they get fewer notes, I think, from their networks. And, you know, like Walking Dead at one time was the biggest show on TV, and their episodes were, you know, an hour, then an hour two, then an hour five, and then you get like scenes that are just breeze in the trees for 40 minutes. Why do we really need we really need this to be a 67-minute episode so you could get that in. So I don't know, to me it gets to a point sometimes where shows are like, we're the greatest thing out there, so we're gonna do what we want and get that producer who wants his little thing in there, like Marcus said.
That was the thing with this was supposed to end, and then they decided that they were gonna do a fifth season. So it was like, this should have been the big banger ending, and then it wasn't.
So I thought that this was supposed to be the end.
It was supposed to be, and then all of a sudden they were like, oh yeah, we're going to do it in five. And I think they figured out that they didn't have all their loose ends tied up, so they had to find a way to extend it. But like the thing that pissed me off, and I don't know what if this did it with you, the 2 days later thing really messed me up.
Yes.
And I was looking at it going, so you're not going to explain how they got back from Russia or how they did any of this other stuff. Like, where is that content?
Everyone just ends up there.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Like you know, where the hell is Murray? What did you do with Enzo? Where are all of these people, you know?
That is a frustrating thing that comes up. Like we saw that at the end of the Star Wars prequels. You know, at the end of Revenge of the Sith, they're like, oh, crap, there's like 12 loose ends. Let's tie him up here in 30 seconds. Like, wipe the memory of the droids. He will never know that Darth Vader built him.
Exactly. 12? You know?
He sure is not.
It was an arbitrary number. But.
That's my argument with R2-D2 and Ben Kenobi.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember owning a droid. Are you serious? Rude.
You did a bunch of space battles with this droid. And just he took an asteroid for you and just I don't remember him at all.
I don't remember I don't remember this worried one either. Yeah. He's stressful.
That was.
He's like, I never remember ever owning a droid. What?
That was cut from the original thing of Star Wars. Marching back and forth, making all his whistles and beeps. Like, are you serious?
He's got his Kenny Baker move more in there.
He's got his little taser attachment. Come here.
I'll show you. I'll make you remember.
Yeah. Right. So, Scott, one of the things that I talked about before we went on break is that the new Thor movie, which came out about a month ago, you had put something on your Facebook that led me to believe you are not happy with it. Well, I wanted to give you a forum to like let us know, like go into a little detail here. How did you feel about the new Thor movie?
Well, one side note, I on the Stranger Things note, just is that I want more of it. So you guys want less pacing, I want more of it. Give me another 6 hours.
Okay.
3 hour episode.
I'm fine. I'm fine with it.
I'm with you on that one. I would take more.
Yeah, Thor, you know, it was like Al was talking about how, like, you know, people don't give notes anymore. I feel like some of these movies, like, at some point, like Sin City 2, 300 2, whatever it's 301, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
You know, these sequels, like, they're like, the studios are like, hey, you know what? You did great. Let's just kind of let you do whatever. I feel like Thor was that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or, like, because Thor Ragnarok, and when you guys were talking about that before, I think it's a beautiful piece of cinema.
Yeah.
And I have a high opinion of cinema because I love it as an art. And
okay.
I know there's popcorn movies out there. I have no apologies about liking Kung Pao. Okay.
Sure.
It is, as far as I'm concerned, one of the top five movies of all time. Yeah, I will argue that it's my,
wow,
to my grave.
All right.
For certain reasons. But it's obviously not it's not a great movie. But anyways, but Thor for me, I went in maybe with too much anticipation of that I was going to get, not just because of Ragnarok, but because of this formula that they've created. I'm fine with, like, breaking formulas. Doctor Strange obviously was more of a horror movie in a sense.
Sure.
And there's more blood than you've seen in most Marvel movies. And I think I see what they were going with Love and Thunder is that it was going to be a comedy, right? This is our Thor Marvel comedy. Yeah. We already did that, okay? Honestly, we did that with Ant-Man, okay? I don't need another one of those, okay? Even Ant-Man, I feel, is probably less comedy beats than Love and Thunder. Love and Thunder is nonstop, in-your-face, whatever you want to call comedy. And it's not even good comedy, in my opinion. Because they even missed a part at the end. The very last spoiler, or the last Easter egg, was, you know, Natalie Portman arriving in Valhalla, and they just made a joke. They just made a joke with Zeus about, oh, yeah, the orgy's going to be at blah, blah, blah. I would have laid that joke in there right at the last minute. I would have had the guy with the sword. I always forget his name, but the guy that teleports.
Heimdall. Yeah.
Okay. I would have had him say that. I would have him, oh, yeah. And the orgy starts in 12 minutes.
Right, welcome to Valhalla.
Yeah,
the orgy is this way.
You had your little kid running up there, jumping with a sword, and, like, you just had breakfast, and now we're killing alien enemies. Mm-hmm. You have nonstop hit me with comedy. I'm just done. I'm exhausted. I'm like, fine, I'll join your group at the end there. I'm like, just throw that in there. You know, but I thought overall, like, the formula that they've been doing with the Marvel movies since, like, since the start of Iron Man. I think Robert Downey Jr. spoiled us. Like, I don't know how much improvising was going on there, how much of that was writing, but his comedy beats in Iron Man set up a precedence for all the further movies. They tried it in Avengers 2, but failed because they were like, hey, everyone's got to have a comedy quip in this movie. Captain America, well, he said ass or whatever, you know, it's like, oh my God, it's so funny, right? But they failed with that movie. Multiple reasons, I think, Avengers with the Ultron thing failed, but they started to succeed with, like, Ragnarok and Captain America with the Winter Soldier. That is my favorite movie out of all of them.
A lot of people point to Winter Soldier as the high water mark.
Nick Fury with the car and, like, like that whole scene. I could watch that scene 1,000 times. But
it's so funny because the complaint that you have about the new Thor movie. I felt that way about Ragnarok. And I mean, you were just saying that you really liked that movie. But to me, I said it on the show when that was new. I was like, Thor is not a funny character. Like, it felt forced to me. And I know that I kind of go against the grain on that because I think Ragnarok is a lot of people's favorite of the series. But to me, it's like, he's a friend from work, and when he's, like, tied upside down, he's like, oh, I'll wait till I come back around. I was like, that's not Thor to me. But you're right about, like, Robert Downey Jr. was so good as Tony Stark. And another thing I've said on this podcast before is I don't like Iron Man in the comics, but I like Iron Man in the movies because Robert Downey Jr. makes him likable to me, and I don't like Tony Stark in the comics at
all. Iron Man and Thor are definitely, in my opinion, as a comic book fan, like, C-list
heroes.
There
you go. I was going to say that.
Yeah. So the fact that they could make them into what they are now over the last decade is fascinating from a comic book perspective. Because even now in the comics, like, there's always going to be an Iron Man comic, and there's always going to be a Thor comic, but, like, sometimes they're still just C-list.
Right.
Yeah.
Chuck's sister Telka has it in for Iron Man, for Tony Stark in general, because of the whole mutant thing.
Yeah, she's still she's not even a big comic book reader, and she's still very pissed about Civil War.
Yeah. I said something about Iron Man being my favorite out of the Marvel movies, but like I didn't specify Marvel movies, and she went in on why he's terrible. Right. And I was like, I'm just talking about Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man. I don't know enough about what you're talking about.
Well, I've bitched about this on the show a number of times already, but there was an Iron Man comic I was reading. It was after the Avengers versus X-Men.
Yeah.
And there was like this, the fourth coming of the Phoenix or whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, and Iron Man helps kill the Phoenix. And then in his standalone book after that, he ends up on this planet where they consider the Phoenix to be their god. And so they arrest him and put him on trial. And he's like, you know what? I know what I did was right, and I understand that this was an important figure to you, so I will stand trial, and whatever you decide, I will abide by your decision. They're like, well, you're guilty. And he's like, I cannot abide by that decision. Iron Man suit activates! Gone. God. Dick.
I mean, when you think about it, though, that's prime Tony Stark.
Yeah, really. Exactly. Well, again, I don't like him. Right. I don't like him.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, Iron Man, the movie, made Iron Man number one.
Yeah.
You know, just
yeah.
boom, he became number one of everything, and like we're all like, okay, I'm accepting of that. Same with Guardians of the Galaxy. Talk about sea level.
Yeah.
He's
Guardians of the Galaxy before the movie.
Some guys in X-Men that you show up occasionally.
I was convinced the Guardians were there only for Thanos to kill so that moviegoers would know why Thanos was a big deal.
Okay.
And the fact that it was as successful as it was is gotta be like 98% James Gunn.
But that's that formula I'm talking about. That's what I was trying to establish, is that formula where it's like there is a nice chunk of comedy in there, but there's some seriousness, a really nasty villain, and then like we blend it all together. And yes, like Thor 1 and Thor 2, like they made Thor that like very less comedy, like I don't get what you're talking about type of thing. But I kind of like how they transition. There's all those weird, like,
and I think
transitions.
I think there's comedic value in that, because, like, if you look back at, like, the history of comedy, especially back when there was comedy teams, like, the comic got the attention, but the straight man made the team.
Yes.
And I thought Thor was a good straight man. Like you said, like, the jokes are going over his head.
Right.
He doesn't know what you're talking about. And I thought that was value in itself. And I think Chris Hemsworth had fun.
But he's like, make me fat. You can't be on a ship with Peter Quill and not come away with comedy at that point. At that point, they have him leave with him. You can't be on a ship of the Guardians and that not rub off on you. So he's going to be goofy regardless. But, like, I'm in the camp with you where, like, I enjoyed it to a degree. It could be a popcorn movie, but, like, I don't feel like it did anything for the MCU, and I'm going to keep saying it as many times as I'm on Nerd Radio. The MCU is directionless right now, and I need them to get back to linking everything together, or else I'm tuning out. I don't care for it.
You know, it just occurred to me, it feels a little bit like when Peter Capaldi was Doctor Who. I don't, because Al, I think you were still watching at that point too, but that first season or two.
I'm still watching now. I just am not enjoying it as much anymore.
Right. But that first season or two was like Matt Smith was gone. They got a new showrunner and it felt like a different show. Like you've thrown the formula out and you're trying something new. Okay. I'm on board for a little while, but by like two seasons in, it's like, can we just go back to the formula that worked? Because I really like that.
I mean, look at like Boba Fett, right? We're all like into Boba Fett and we're like, okay, we're so excited about this freaking assassin from space that we can't. The guy's in it in the movie. He's got one line and like he's got screen time for how many seconds is Boba Fett in the entire extent?
Sure.
You know, and then we're like excited about it. And then they like at the end, they're like, you know what? Screw it. Put Mandalorian in there. We're done.
I think that happened for a different reason, though. Here's my theory.
Okay.
Every time that Mando's in trouble, who does he go to? Cara Dune, Greef Karga. Mm-hmm. Can't go to Cara Dune anymore.
Because that actress is not going to be used.
So I think that they had to change directions on that. They got Cobb Vanth, which is cool. But at the same time, it's like they had to add an extra beat in there to explain why they were doing that. Not saying it's right that the Mandalorian basically got two episodes in Boba Fett.
Right.
But I think that's where that got screwed up, because the story feels like it took a turn that didn't make any sense.
Mm.
That's my theory.
Sounds so what have you been up to, Al?
Nothing.
All right. Well, that's the show. Thanks for that. Are you watching anything fun?
The only thing I've been watching lately is I went back to the beginning of X-Files.
Oh wow.
Nice.
That's a good start.
How's it hold up?
I think it holds up great, but then I have affection for that show already. It's definitely the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, but it's fun watching people drive around in Oldsmobiles and Ford Tauruses.
Hell yeah.
But the one thing that kind of, like, I've watched, I don't know, 3 or 4 episodes of it so far. And already, I think in episode 2, it was that this guy who's over 100 years old and he can squeeze himself through air vents and takes your livers. So that's like episode 2 or 3 of the whole series,
right?
And they're like, he comes up every 30 years and they're like, we gotta get him now because the next time he's gonna show up, it won't be till 2023. And I was like, oh my god. Oh my god, that's next year.
It's like the meme I saw last week that somebody had seen on Wikipedia that like George Jetson's birthday is sometime in the next couple of weeks.
It already happened.
George Jetson was born last week.
Or the
Jesus Christ has come, but it's George Jetson.
Yeah. Or was it 2015, the Back to the Future thing? Something like that. Yeah. So that's come and gone.
I think all this stuff has been passed. Like the Terminator, I think Mad Max. I think they were like, okay, well, that's supposed to be what we're at right now with Mad Max.
Right. Yeah.
Well, in Star Trek, where the Space Seed, the episode where we get Khan, the eugenics war, when he was like taking over the world and shot himself into space. I think that was 1998. It was supposed to be. So, because that was, you know, 30 years in the future for them when they did that episode, you know. Mm-hmm. But I can't
think of any off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's science fiction that's doing that now.
Yeah.
Like picking a date that's like 30 years from now.
I think we hit Blade Runner recently.
Right. It's like, it's going to be an amazing thing. Right. It's like the game was Cyberpunk 2099. Like, I'm not going to live long enough to see that not happen. But at the same time,
someone will. Is the point. Yeah.
Where are my floating cars? I want them.
You can't trust people with normal cars. You can't make those cars float.
Yeah, that's true.
How did you feel about their, like, I was so excited when they were like, oh, we're going to bring back X-Files. And they brought back episodes that were so good. And they're like, yeah, we're done. See ya.
Yeah. And I feel like they had said that they were going to be doing more and then it just never happened.
Yeah.
I did kind of enjoy it, but it made me itch for going back and watching the old stuff again. Because I will say, I have not seen every episode of X-Files. There's, I think, 2 seasons I haven't seen. Because when the T-1000 came in, after David Duchovny left, I just...
Season 6 and 7, I believe.
Checked out.
I did kind of check out. But, man, it was so good early on. Going back and watching old episodes, not having seen them in a long time, I was struck by how young those two look. You know what I mean? David Duchovny, I think, is like 33 at the time. And Gillian Anderson's 25 years old.
Yeah. She still looks good, though.
Yeah, she does.
She's hot. Well, she will forever be hot.
On that remake.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the remake. She had this scene. Yeah.
She was in Hannibal. And I was just like, dude, I love this chick so much.
Yeah.
Like, she's so cool.
Was she in the show? Or are they talking about the movie? Because that was Julianne Moore.
No, in the TV show.
She showed up in the TV show?
Yeah, she was Hannibal's therapist in the TV show.
No kidding.
And she was very, like, very cold, like, you know, straight man playing,
my girlfriend and I just watched the First Lady show on Showtime, and she played Eleanor Roosevelt. She was not hot. That's old Ellie. She did a great job. There was actually a pretty good cast on there. Michelle Pfeiffer was Betty Ford. Aaron Eckhart, Two-Face.
Nice.
He played Gerald Ford. Eleanor Roosevelt. And then Kiefer Sutherland played FDR.
That's a hell of a cast.
Yeah, it was a really good cast. But, man, she was really good in that role. But, anyway.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break because we've been talking for a minute here.
I thought we were done.
No, it's got to be 3 segments, man.
Yes. We haven't even asked me what I've been doing.
I don't ask you what you've been doing because we've been doing the same thing.
I mean, that's true.
So we'll be back with some more Nerd Radio, and you'll find out about this weekend's Netflix and Chill that me and Amy were all in on.
Ooh. Oh, my God.
I mean, that sound is kinkier than it should.
Hey, that's why it's called a tease.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Pause that game. It's time for more Nerd Radio.
I don't want to see it.
Welcome back to Nerd Radio. A studio full of nerds is what we got here today. We got Amy, Scott, Al, and Marcus. And, of course, your host here, Chuck Bean. We were all talking about what we've been up to this past week. We just gotten around to the table to the point where me and Amy were going to talk about what we had watched this week.
But the only living Scott Hall.
The only right, living I'm Scott here, Hall. Sorry. Was actually while we were on break, was talking about a documentary on Netflix that I hadn't actually checked out yet. You want to fill the listeners in here?
Yeah, it's about Jimmy Savile. It's the actual
title. So who is this guy, for starters?
He's like a TV/DJ. He did radio, but it was mostly shows. He would do shows that like kind of game shows. Like they would say, Jimmy, the kids would write in and ask him, adults, whoever would ask, write in and ask him, hey, can you do this? I want to fly. Or one of the weird things was the kid wrote in and he said, I want my duck to fly. He can't fly. So his producers would arrange it. And, you know, Jimmy's, this will all be on his show, and they would get the duck on the plane, and, oh, it's so cute. And everyone from Prince Charles, Diana, Ruth Gare Ginsburg, you name some huge British royalty or star, they love this guy. And I'm trying to think of, like, an American comparison. Like
somebody that's only a big deal here.
Like a morning show. I'm trying to think. I can't think of it right now. But, like, because he's so famous, but no one here seems to freaking know
it's a household name over in the UK,
absolutely,
though.
Right. Okay. Absolutely. They from.
Was there a scandal that was uncovered?
Yeah, a bit.
Oh, okay. Boy. Yeah, I will say, when I was watching documentaries on Bob Ross and on Mr. Rogers, I was like, cringing the whole time. I'm like, I don't want to find out anything. Turns out they're both really great guys.
Okay.
Oh,
God.
Oh my God.
Who is it for you that if you found out he did something bad, you would be just heartbroken? I know mine's Dave Grohl.
I think I was saying I'm anticipating finding out something bad about Taika Waititi.
Oh, that's who it is. Yeah.
Like I love our Flag Means Death and What We Do in the Shadows, and like his humor is really funny.
I got right there, Thor.
Yeah. That's his big.
I would be ashamed.
Mark. Yeah. Interesting. So yeah, over the weekend, Amy and I had unofficially decided to really go all in on Netflix because we've been catching up on the latest season of The Umbrella Academy, and we were about three or four episodes from the end. I think on Sunday night we ordered dinner and I was like, let's just finish it. Let's just watch it. That show is amazing.
Is it?
That show is so charming. And I think in a world where we have a Marvel Cinematic Universe and a DC universe that apparently isn't going to get a Batgirl movie. I'm sure you guys saw they've decided to shelve.
But we're still getting a Flash movie.
Yeah. We'll see. Shelving a Batgirl movie that's essentially done. But yeah, the Umbrella Academy is just its own self-contained thing with superheroes in it, and it's written really, it's really charming and it's funny, but it has stakes and emotional beats to it. And
who's the original creator on that? Is that Terry Moore?
The Umbrella Academy is Gerard Way
from My Chemical Romance.
Oh, wow. Wrote the comics for that.
Okay,
and he's got a partner. I forget the name of the partner.
Do not remember.
Because I've always seen it, but I've always been like on the outer spectrum of that whole world.
It's interesting because it started like the first season. I was like, oh, well, this is just a love letter to like the original X-Men because like they all have powers and they all grew up at this school with this teacher that was kind of a dick to him the whole time. And now in the first season, it's like they all come back together for the funeral for him because he's dead and find out, you know, other things that had happened. And you can see characters like, oh, well, that's the Jean Grey, and that's the Cyclops, and that's the Hank McCoy. All right, cool. But then the second season had a time travel element to it. And then the third season is more multiverse, because when they finish the time travel, they come back to a future where they didn't exist. And there's a whole bunch of new kids at a Sparrow Academy instead of an Umbrella Academy.
That's where the dance-off comes in, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil
that. There's always dancing.
There's always dancing. Every season has dancing, and I feel like this season had more dancing than
it
usual.
It certainly felt that way.
It's not something that you go like, ugh, not this again, but it's interesting to see all the characters interact. And it's also been cool on the LGBTQ side of things, because Ellen Page transitioned to Elliot Page,
right?
Which then they wrote into the character of that Vanya transitioned to Victor. And everybody respects it. Despite like how their characters are, a lot of their characters can be shitty to each other.
Yeah.
But they're all like, this is totally fine. And even one of the brothers is like, should we do something? Should we have a party?
Yeah.
This is important. And it's really sweet. So that's always awesome when you see good, positive queer characters doing positive, awesome things.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I highly recommend it. It's very, very enjoying and enjoyable. And like I said, it's self-contained, so you don't have to watch like four shows and three movies to know what's going on like you do with a lot of the Marvel stuff. Like I'm just going to watch Umbrella Academy. I'm going to have a good time.
Well, that's the one show I was telling you about. I feel like that's the same thing. Most people don't seem to be talking about is the Love, Death, and Robots. That's another Netflix.
Yeah. And that's an animated thing. Some of it's CGI, and I think isn't some of it just like straight up animation?
It's all correlated around some kind of animation, whether it's digital or like filmed and then mixed in with some kind of They did one where they had, I think it was Topher Grace, and it was like a weird thing where miniaturized.
That's an anthology series. So like every episode, like they don't run into each other.
Sort of. There's one where there's these three cute robots and they kind of like continue that story.
Oh, interesting.
In the latest one, but they more or less it's all independent. But I think that some of these animators we're seeing in movies, that's their jumping board. They're like springboard for getting into some of these. Because the last season is ultra violent. Like I am a old school Faces of Death guy. Okay, and like if you don't know what those are, it's old school VHS
those are snuff
tapes.
Films,
right?
Essentially,
my dad would like, oh yeah, I gotta get all these. I'm like, whatever, Dad. You watch this crap. I'm like, I never understood that. I'm like, Dad, you're just watching people die. What's up with that? You know, but that's kind of like this one's crazy. There's like a Cthulhu one in it that's ultra crazy,
right?
The robot ones are kind of like they're tongue in cheek because they're these robots that come after mankind has died, and so they're just kind of checking out. But they're like they're humans in an apocalyptic world, but they're robots,
right?
Like taking snapshots and stuff like that, taking selfies, hey, look at Skull, selfies and stuff like that.
Well, that setup is kind of like your Sandman thing where some of the stuff transitions over, but not all of it.
Well, yeah, that was the other thing I wanted to bring up is that the Neil Gaiman Sandman series came out on Friday, and I'm about halfway through it and absolutely in love.
Oh, that's good to hear.
It is everything I wanted and more. It's 10 episodes, and the first six, which is the ones I watched, are each the first six issues of the original comic.
Okay.
And all of them have changes to them, whether it's a matter of like they cast a black woman as Death, or instead of using John Constantine episode 3, they use Joanna Constantine, and Jenna Coleman, who was in Doctor Who, plays that character. But all of the changes make sense and I think make all the stories better.
What's the background on this though? Okay. I am not like, I love and respect Neil Gaiman, but I have not delved deeply into all of his literature. Okay. Other than like, I think there was a book called Neverwinter or something.
Neverwhere.
I read that and I like that.
Yeah.
But is he directly, like unlike most things that you just kind of sell off something and they do things, he's directly involved?
He is. Yeah. So I was just reading a Variety article where he talked about the fact that there's been multiple pitches to make either a feature film or a series of some sort out of Sandman, and he's been involved in all of them and very quickly turned many of them down. Like back in 2016, somebody had pitched a movie to him, and like somewhere on page 5, there was a change to it. He's like, no, that completely changes the character. I'd rather not make it than make it bad kind of thing. And he's an executive producer on this particular show as well. But yeah, Sandman is, it's I was trying to explain it to Amy in the 90s when DC decided to make the Vertigo imprint, which was supposed to be more adult, horror, supernatural comics, something like that. Like Sandman was the crown jewel. It was like Sandman, Hellblazer, which was just a John Constantine book, Animal Man, Swamp Thing. And the reason for that is when Alan Moore took over Swamp Thing and took it from being a superhero book to being just a straight up horror book.
Right.
People reacted in the 80s very well to that. And then there was this, it wasn't its own pocket universe, but there was, Sandman started as a DC book. One of the characters I was explaining to Amy in like episode 4 was like an old D-list Justice League villain.
Gas mask and all that?
No, that was like in the 50s. That was who the Sandman was. Right. And part of Neil Gaiman making this book was trying to explain like how that character fit into what he was building, which was this pantheon of they're not quite gods, but they all incorporate something of the human existence, whether it's death or dream, which is the main character you're watching, the Sandman, or you know, everybody in his family, desire and delirium, and the stories center around humans that have interactions with specifically dream, but you know, other people in his family. And it's really good.
I've heard nothing but positive things.
And for a show that took place, you know, kind of like you watch like the making of The Mandalorian or Boba Fett, and they've got that big green screen room that they were like, I'm watching the episode where he goes to hell, and I know that like this entire thing was filmed in one green room, but I'm in, man. Like you're giving me, it's a little bit like watching the Sin City movie or Watchmen, where like you're giving me panels pulled directly off a page I read, you know, like 20 years ago, and I'm watching actors in scenes delivering lines that have lived in my brain for 20 years, and like, this is amazing. But I am curious for Amy to watch it, because I've been watching that one more by myself.
Okay.
I'm curious for Amy or people that have not read the books to watch it and see, does it still translate? Is it still just as powerful and impressive to them?
I did not get a chance to do that. I did get a chance to watch Prey, and
I've heard that was great.
Yeah, that was good. Although I kind of stumbled into it and did not do the Comanche thing with the, where it's supposed to be all the Comanche language. They started talking in Comanche, and then it just switched to English. I'm like, okay,
all right.
But I didn't know there was an option where you can just keep going with Comanche. But everyone's like, you gotta listen to it with Comanche.
Because
like,
it's essentially,
I don't care, it was still good. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, it's essentially a predator versus like an Indian tribe,
right?
An American, a Native American tribe,
right? The Comanches, I guess. But yeah, that was awesome. They even had a slight spoilers. There is a connection between. Well, there's a connection between both the Predator 1 and Predator 2, but more specifically, a very visual connection between Predator 2 and this movie.
Ooh, that really piques my interest.
Because like, Predator 2, you see something and you're like, oh, yeah.
Predator 2 is not as good as Predator 1, but for some reason, I like it more.
I like In Predator City. 2, though.
it's really fascinating. I can't even put my finger on why I like Predator 2 more, but like, there's something
awesome
about it.
I think they're both. I just watched Predator 1 because, of course, Hulu threw up all the movies. Including the, I might be out on this, but I do not like AVP. Number one, I do like the second one where it's just like, hey, screw it. We're just going to have Predator and Alien kill literally everything in this 20-mile area, and you're just going to deal with it. I'm like, I'm okay with that.
Right.
Whereas the other one's like, oh, no, look, Predators created mankind, and we used aliens to make a hunting ground for Earth is nothing more than a hunting ground. I vaguely remember that because I checked out right after. They're like, yeah, the reason we have all this technology, the reason we're able to do these podcasts right now is because of Predator. Thank you, Predator. Thank you, God-man Predator.
How did the Predator kill people with podcasts? I don't understand, but... But yeah, The Sandman, highest possible recommendation, and really interested to see other people that haven't checked it out. And then we checked out the Woodstock documentary, which we were talking about before the show.
That was pretty wild. Not really very nerdy, but pretty wild overall. I mean, I guess it's nerdy that we're watching a documentary, but it was three parts, and it was super interesting. And, you know, he has a frame of reference about it from that era. I was sheltered, so I didn't.
Thank you, Al.
I was trying to be kind about it and saying I was sheltered, not
that
Al's old.
Al's that kind.
But,
sheltered by non-existence.
I knew that something happened, but I did not know how. So that was very interesting to see, and seeing my boys Limp Bizkit tuning people up is always something.
It hadn't occurred to me until, like, while we're watching it, I remember if you said Woodstock 99 to me at any point, I'd be like, oh yeah, that was not, that was like the bad one, right? Like, stuff, bad stuff happened at that one, but I couldn't, like, put my finger on any of it. And then while we're watching it, I was like, oh yeah, Korn had a set, and then, like, the crowd got super unruly. Oh yeah, the Chili Peppers played Jimi Hendrix Fire, and then the crowd set fire to a bunch of stuff. I forgot about this.
The fire had already started, and then they played that, which was like, why would you let that happen?
Right.
They handed candles to the crowd to have a vigil. So
it's interesting to see the behind the scenes of it, to be
you
like,
handed them fire.
Hey, here's some gasoline, too.
Exactly.
Oh, it was a disaster all around, wasn't it? And I think it hadn't occurred to me until after we got done watching it. I think because it happened in 99 and like 9/11 is 2 years later, that part of my brain was just like, oh yeah, tragedy within that time frame? Yeah, Twin Towers. That's the tragedy.
Right, of course.
Not the super expensive festival that went wrong.
A bit of a show stealer.
I am a bit surprised, though, that nobody brings it up when they talk about Firefest or what happened at Astroworld. Nobody references Woodstock 99 at all. Right. And I'm like, that's like the precursor to some of that, because Astroworld, it was like people got trampled, people were squished, and I'm sure that happened with Woodstock as well. It just, the fire stands out more than anything else, so it's really interesting.
The part I loved the most was the guy who said he was about 22, and he was in the room with everybody a couple weeks beforehand, and he's looking at the artist list of Korn, Limp Bizkit, Metallica, and was like, you guys know who's showing up, right? Like, you guys understand what the crowd's gonna be like.
Within the first 5 minutes of the episode, the first episode, you see Mike the Miz Mizanin from WWE in the camera going, Woodstock, baby! And I'm just like, oh no. That's not good if you got the Miz all.
Also, you get to see quite a bit of Flea's penis.
Yeah, because his penis is everywhere.
Yeah, he performed naked.
It's just wagging about. And
at one point, it's on the stage by itself.
They apparently, they're playing Comerica on Sunday, and he's like, well, do you think Flea's going to play naked? I'm like, I don't need to see any more of Flea's penis. I think I'm set.
I hope you get in the photo pit. I hope you get a real good shot.
Oh, like my Flea's contract, junk. Right?
Yeah.
You know, Autobahn!
They didn't even bother bleeping it out. I mean, I guess if you want to be pervy about it, there's a lot of tits and penis in this whole thing. So
right. It's on Netflix.
That's my James role today. There's a lot of tits
that we can't
and
call
penis.
The name of this episode Tits and Penis.
It's on Netflix. You got to click on it.
But there was a lot of that going on.
Right. And to wrap up this week's Nerd Radio is a story that I'd actually pulled up that Kotaku had reported on a couple of days ago. So Netflix added gaming to the service like a year ago. And apparently new data shows that less than 1% of subscribers are actually checking out Netflix games, which is really disappointing.
What are these games? What is it?
So first of all, when it started, it was very lackluster. Like, it was a lot of like cell phone games that like you would not normally play, but it had both of the Stranger Things games in there, which are both phenomenal.
Both those.
I haven't played the third one all the way through, but I played the one that was based on the second season. And that one is literally like old school Legend of Zelda. With
it's
Stranger
a mobile
Things
game,
Carol.
Though, right? On your
it
phone?
Is, yeah, but I think I think you can probably play it if you pull it up on, you know, like your computer or something.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. But they did just add the game Into the Breach, which has been a PC game for years, that is essentially it's giant robots versus kaiju in like a Final Fantasy Tactics style type of game.
Okay.
Like you move your characters around almost like a miniatures game. You get your turn and you move your robot and you punch a kaiju, and then the kaiju gets his turn and he moves to the city and punches the tower, and you're trying to save the city from getting overrun by kaiju. And they did just add that game, which is really kind of fun. They've got some neat stuff on there,
so
honestly.
Pacific Rim.
Like, yes, Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim right there. That's interesting. Do you access it right through Netflix? Or
you can.
How do you,
okay. Yeah, well, that's with the phone version, you pull up Netflix, you click on the games, and it shows you the games, and then when you click on the game, it takes you to whatever your cell phone, you know, if you're on iTunes or Google Play Market, to download the game. But you still access, it's almost like a launcher that you access the games through.
For all the things that they promote, I really feel like Marcus knows nothing about it. I don't have a damn clue, and I'm a gamer.
Right.
He's a gamer. Yeah. Like, other than you seeing it on Kotaku, I mean, I'm shocked that where is
that
the advertising
exists
for this, man?
Yeah. I think part of the reason they don't bother to advertise it is because they don't have a whole lot of very cool things to check out on it. Like, there is a, they did the League of Legends cartoon a couple of months ago. There is a League of Legends spinoff game on there, and I have no idea what kind of game it is. Also, if you're, if you play a lot of board games and card games and you've played the game Exploding Kittens, you can play a version of that through Netflix games.
I wish they'd do more of those choose your own adventure things like they did with Bandersnatch.
That would be really fun. There are a couple of games on there that I think are more like visual novel style games like that.
Never checked out The Undertaker with the New Day.
No, we
didn't. Choose their own adventure.
Yeah, it came out back in Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah, we never got around to that.
Yeah, the WWE did one with The Undertaker and The New Day, and it's like the New Day is running from The Undertaker.
Yeah, like a spooky mansion
or something.
Oh, what?
And like, we never ended up watching it, but I feel like we need to at some point.
Yeah. Usually they have like a, I think it was a Wendy's, was it Wendy's? Or no, it was a KFC Dungeons and Dragons adventure or something. Like you.
Really?
Download. Yeah, it was like a specific, like obviously they were jumping on the whole Stranger Things bandwagon.
Yes.
You know, and they like made a, and I can't remember if it was Wendy's or KFC, but one of the two like made a specific adventure that you download and it's just that you're in that environment, but you're a Dungeons & Dragons character.
Oh, that's silly.
So yeah, I guess the moral of the story is if you haven't checked out Netflix game, it's worth looking at.
Okay.
For sure. You can access it right from your phone. And honestly, with so many streaming services, the last couple of things I watched on Netflix, I really, really loved. Like I said, between Sandman and Umbrella Academy, like and Stranger Things, like
they got some stuff coming up
too.
This
stuff is really good.
Yeah, they got some stuff coming up. Where I think they got a new Gundam show that'll be coming out in the near future. It looks pretty good,
right?
Animated.
There's that vampire movie with Snoop Dogg in it.
Oh,
coming out.
They just dropped more Lock and Key.
What's it called?
Too.
I got to know.
Yeah,
what
that's
called.
Right. The third season of Lock and Key is coming.
It's up now.
Yeah.
Like, as of today.
We got to catch up.
Yeah, I know.
Because I love those comics.
I can highly recommend one show that's not on Netflix, though. It's Primal. Have you guys heard of that?
No.
Yeah,
it's by the same guy, John Kotofsky, that made Dexter's Lab and Samurai Jack.
It's animated, right? Yeah,
yes.
It's
insane. I think it was nominated for some Emmys. I don't know if they won anything, but it's on. You can get it on Amazon. You'd have to pay for the episodes, or you can go on HBO.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, HBO Max.
It's on there. Yeah.
It has it on there. I think you can maybe get it through like some kind of Comcast thing.
Interesting.
So it's not as easy to access as most people have Netflix. Bam, you got it right there. But if you got HBO Max, it's there. But just the I highly recommend at least getting season one. Just get the whole season one. It's mind-blowing. It's very visceral. It's very violent. But it's the art style is just – you could just sit there and stare at like – a pause screen.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Nice.
One last thing, and this is kind of gaming and Netflix in a way, but there's a new game, Warner Brothers Multiverse.
Multiverses. Oh, yeah. James is super in on this game.
So have you guys heard that there is a push to get Breaking Bad into Multiverses?
What?
There is a push of people that are saying they want to see Walter White
versus
and Jesse Pinkman
versus Bugs Bunny.
Yes, Iron Giant, all of that. Batman versus Walter White. And there are people, they are pushing so hard. They have actually created fan art of Walter White in the game. Oh. And he has his stats and everything.
Is he wearing his underpants?
No, he's got, the green. Shirt. He's got the green shirt on, like from the first episode, but he's bald head and everything, and it's really interesting. And there's people there getting to the point where they're acting like Walter, and Jesse's like, hey, Walt, you know,
we got a cook, Mr. White.
He's like, Jesse, what is this? What is this game? I need to be in this game. Like, they need to know my name, Heisenberg. And so it's getting interesting.
I mean, they've got somebody from Game of Thrones in there, so
I hope his dialogue is, "I am the one who knocks," right before he punches someone.
Well, if they give us Tuco, I'm in.
Hey, yeah, there we go. Just bring everyone in there. Bring Gus in.
I thought all of that game, though, was related around whatever Warner Brothers owns. Am I right on that?
Mostly.
From what it looks like, Warner Brothers.
So there is a few that break in outside of that?
I don't think so. Not
John Cena? Or was that?
That was Fortnite.
That was Fortnite.
I almost want to say it's everything that Viacom owns almost, because it's like, you even got Cartoon Network in there. You got Adventure Time and stuff. And,
there's some Steven Universe characters.
Yeah. And so I almost think it's just like everything that they own. So, and I think that's where people are making this connection now with what before like, they were on Netflix, before Breaking Bad was on Netflix, it was on was it HBO or
AMC?
AMC. Yeah. So I think that's where people are making this connection of saying that, you know, since that was owned by the same company, then Breaking Bad should be in here as well, you know. So,
gotcha.
You
interesting.
Know, you know, so you know, we'll see where it goes. It might be a DLC later on in that game.
Well, they add new characters.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I know everyone was excited with Mortal Kombat every time they added like a whatever.
Yeah, they give you
Predator, Terminator, mm-hmm. Jason.
Well, before we leave, let's go around the table once again. Scott, where can people find you on online?
Mostly Studio 489. It's usually
on Twitch.
Yep.
On
Twitch, Instagram.
Cool. And Marcus?
You know, I'm just trying to get back out there on social media. Still got to find my Instagram password. But if you want to look at my old post, go and look up The Hypeness and the_hypeness. You check out my old post there till I find my new passwords.
And Amy?
You can find me at acronymiz.com and acronymiz on all social media.
And, of course, you can find me and Al at Nerd Radio 101.
Or RobLeifeldFeet.com every other week. Me, personally, currently in hell because I'm still sitting here.
Yeah, well, we're wrapping up right now, so you can leave.
Thank God.
That's going to do it for this week.
I love you being here, Al.
That's going to do it for this week's Nerd Radio on Twitch and on Rift 2. But if you're listening to the podcast, you know, you can see already that you've got another 10 to 15 minutes. And that's because I got an opportunity to talk to the WWE's Gunther. I almost messed it up again and said Walter. They changed his name to Gunther this morning. And that's going to be at the end of this week's podcast. So stay tuned for the podcast, and we will check you guys out again in 2 weeks.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Pause that game. We're back with more Nerd Radio.
Honestly, I hate working here. They are so weird.
Welcome back to Nerd Radio. We've got an extra special thing to end this week's Nerd Radio, and that is a brief sit-down discussion with WWE Intercontinental Champion, longest-reigning NXT UK Champion, and just wins belts everywhere he goes and chops everybody as hard as humanly possible. We're talking to the WWE's Gunther. Gunther, how are you this morning?
How are you? I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It is a pleasure to talk to you. I've been a fan for a long time, well before you were probably even in NXT UK, seeing videos of you on YouTube and just being like, did he just kill that man? He hit him so hard.
Trying to, at least.
Well, it is neat. It is fantastic to talk to you. Of course, we've got as we speak now, you've got a match with the Intercontinental title this coming Friday with Shinsuke Nakamura. How are you feeling leading into that match?
Oh, I'm excited. I feel really good about it. Shinsuke is easily one of the best wrestlers in the world of the last decade, like the last 10 years or something.
Sure.
When I really started out in my career, going around places and stuff, he was definitely one of the guys I always used to watch. And to be like, okay, that's the standard that is set in the world right now when it comes to quality of matches and stuff like that. And yeah, so it's really exciting to get to wrestle him now and compete with him in the ring. And yeah, but regardless of that, in there with like focused on my own success, and he's a great opponent. It's going to be a great contest.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we're looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks when SmackDown hits the Little Caesars Arena here August 26th. Ticketmaster still has tickets available right now. Drew McIntyre, Ronda Rousey be there. And of course, our Intercontinental Champion. Gunther, we're looking forward to seeing you as well. Now, you've been on the SmackDown roster for a couple of months now. I took some questions before. Let me back up before we I talk to you here. I took a couple of questions from our listeners to see what they would like to ask you. And one of our listeners, Tivius Sloan, asked almost immediately, "When are you going to take on the Bloodline?" I think a dream match for a lot of fans is like, well, Roman Reigns and Gunther, that'd bring the house down. Is that something that you are focused on and looking forward to?
Focused on right now. I'm not. I'm definitely here to compete with the best. That's like, I didn't come over to just hang around and see what happens. I'm here to, yeah, to be the top guy, to get in the ring with the best the company has to offer. And obviously those three you mentioned are, especially Roman, are in that category. So that step down the line, that's definitely something I want to do. But like I just said before, right now I got Shinsuke this Friday. So that's my main focus. But going forward, definitely.
That's a good mindset, too, to not look past somebody like Shinsuke Nakamura, because like you said before, he's been a fantastic talent for years and years and years. So that alone is definitely a dream match to see the two of you guys in the ring. Is there any dream matches that you personally have as far as, you know, now that you're on the main WWE roster with SmackDown and Raw, or even people that are no longer or haven't yet been with the WWE? Are there wrestlers that you're like, man, I'd really like to get in the ring and mix it up with them?
Well, I don't really have a list of people I wanna wrestle, I gotta say. Like I said before, I wanna be in the ring with the best. There are some matches that have been thrown around recently a little bit. I saw Bobby Lashley coming out and saying like he's open for a contest. That's something I'm very interested to.
Yeah,
obviously.
That would be great.
The guy is an absolute beast. Like, look at him.
Yeah.
So obviously that's something I want to do. And that's just one name of many in that company that are super established and that can be categorized as the top of the world in this sport, in professional wrestling, basically. And that's what I'm aiming for. So all those typical names that come up when you mention the best, those are the ones I want to go after.
Sure. Sure. Now you have, one of your trademarks for the long time has been the how big you are as a person, how tall you are, and what a massive man you are that people are like, how are you going to beat a guy that large? Now, since you've moved to SmackDown, fans have noticed that you've dropped a bunch of weight and you're actually very chiseled now. How does it feel? You know, like what's your workout regimen? What's your dieting regimen as far as that? How do you feel as a person now that you are slimmer and more defined?
I gotta say, I never had like any issues in the ring or something. Like, my stamina was always good. I could always carry myself through whatever I needed to do with
sure
any issues. But obviously there's a difference now. Movements are way easier now and stuff like that. There's definitely a difference I can feel. In regards of the training didn't really change much. Besides, I do more cardiovascular exercises now. Basically just adapted the diet. I always liked the chunky look of an old school heavyweight.
And sure.
Sticked around with that. But then when I moved over here and I knew I would be heading towards main roster, I thought, okay, it's time to change myself up a little bit and go through a little bit of a development with my, like, with the person I am, to make a statement a little bit.
Yeah, I was definitely in the camp when we first noticed that, like, Gunther is smaller, but I mean, he's still hitting people as hard as humanly possible. I was like, man, I did kind of like him when he was an old school kind of just a big wall of a man. But like I said, it has not changed your wrestling style whatsoever. That was something I definitely wanted to ask you about, because you are known for what looks like the hardest chops in professional wrestling. And I wanted to know, like, was there a moment, was there a specific chop maybe that you hit somebody with and you went, oh, this is going to be my thing? Like, the crowd really responded to that, and that looked and felt really good.
Not that I can remember a particular situation or something like that. It was more like when it came to the stuff I do in the ring, I always tried to be as logic as possible, to be like, okay, what makes sense for me to do with my body constitution. So I always thought I got very long limbs. I got long legs and I got long arms. So I was like, okay, a bunch of strikes is going to make sense for me. And then I just played around with stuff and see what works and what doesn't. And then, yeah, I pick the things I'm basically doing now and try to do them as efficient, as good as possible over time. And yeah, a knife edge job is one of those things.
Somebody else, one of our listeners, actually one of my co-hosts wanted me to ask you. So you have two matches in NXT. Not only do you have some of the best matches in NXT, but two matches that were rated as five-star matches. And in fact, CBS Sports ranked your 2020 match with Ilya Dragunov as the best match of the year. Do you have a favorite between those two matches?
No, I don't think there's a favorite. They've been different each time. I think like the first one was special because it was in an empty arena.
Yeah.
During the pandemic and stuff. And it was like I was the quite dominant part in that match. And I still dominated that match. And it basically, I dictated it a little bit more. And then going back or like going forward then from there, I don't know. I don't remember if it was months or even a little bit longer than a year.
Sure.
Ilya developed as a wrestler too. So in that match, I was way more in danger right from the get-go.
Sure.
And in the other match, so it was, I think it was we set a very different tone in the two matches. So they've been, very different. And I think for the viewer, just when it comes to the ending of the matches, it's been different too, because the one is the actual success story and the other one.
Sure.
Wasn't.
Yeah, that's something she said is like, I bet his favorite is the one that he won instead of the one that he did not win.
Yeah, I think at the end, I think the second one might be the one that I maybe prefer when it comes to like gut feeling wise, because it kind of closed the circle for me.
Yeah.
From my time in NXT UK. And I felt like I did it in the best way possible. I could do it. And yeah, so. Well, I think like when all that was done, I felt very achieved with my time there.
You hear a lot of rock stars when, you know, they go into like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or they get passed over for like an award. They're like, well, awards don't really matter. When it comes to, you know, finding out like Dave Meltzer gave you five stars on a match, or that, you know, CBS Sports said it's the match of the year. Do you guys feel the same way, or do like you and Ilya like at one point look at each other like, dude, we got a five-star match. How cool is that?
No, I never had that moment, Ilya.
No.
I think I have more than one or two. I don't know. I literally don't know how many five-star matches I had. But obviously, like you just mentioned, comparing it with musicians and stuff like that, it's a little bit of a thing to play down awards a little bit. At the end of the day, there's truth to that. At the end of the day, it doesn't make a big difference.
Yeah.
But it still is. Obviously, the reality is there's that outlet that gives out an award, and a lot of people listen to that, or to a lot of people that opinion is important. So it definitely helps you in marketing, in the marketing perspective. You get talked about a lot more and stuff like that. So in that regard, it's a good thing. And I guess when you look back in a few years, or I don't know, 20, 30 years, if people remember that and mention it, it's going to be nice for everybody who ever got awarded with something.
For sure. Well, like I said earlier, we're looking forward to seeing you along with Drew McIntyre, Ronda Rousey, and the whole SmackDown crew at the LCA on August 26th. Tickets still available, Ticketmaster. And I was just informed before the interview here that the dark match is actually going to be the Street Profits versus the Usos, and dark match is always a great opportunity to see the wrestlers with the cameras off and see you guys kind of like have a good time and have some fun out there. I've got one more question for you before I let you go, Gunther. Thank you so much for your time here. You just tweeted out a couple of days ago a amazing picture of yourself, and the caption was just an all caps pro wrestling champion. And a lot of people picked up on that because before Vince McMahon had retired a few weeks ago, it was something the fans had thought that, like, you know, calling yourself wrestlers was something that they didn't want you to do. They wanted you to think of yourself as sports entertainers. Once again, you've only been with SmackDown for a couple of months, but there's been some huge changes in the last month alone. Is that something that Is that something you can feel backstage and in your work, that like things are different now?
To be fair, and I'm actually glad I got the chance to work with Vince a little bit.
Sure.
Since my time there and the few interactions we had, there weren't that many. I'm actually kind of glad that happened, so I still made that experience a little bit.
Absolutely.
Obviously, everybody was surprised about that, and then, yeah, if whatever company, if somebody else is in charge, things are gonna be done a little different. That's normal. Everybody has his own approach. But I've got to be honest, I haven't felt stressed or anything like that before. I always kind of focused on myself and I did myself, and that's not going to change. And that's the same with, obviously from the tweet, I got there was big reactions on that and stuff like that.
Sure.
If you open my Twitter page or my Instagram, it always said Berufsringer or Berufsringkämpfer. I don't even know what it says exactly, which is the German word for professional wrestler. Ah. It's always been in there. And at the end of the day, professional wrestler is a sports entertainer. Professional wrestling is a sport that is there to entertain.
Sure.
It's not a competitive sport. You can say it one or the other way. I always refer to myself as a professional wrestler, and even in WWE, where the entertainment aspect is way higher, let's say, than compared to other places. At the end, when the bell rings, it's wrestling will never change, and that's what it is. But there has not been, I wouldn't say, there has not been a memo or something like that where it's like, hey, guys, you can call yourself wrestlers again or something.
Sure. And
I never stopped referring to myself as that, so...
Well, I'm very, very interested to see you in a live capacity after seeing you effectively chop the shit out of some of my favorite wrestlers over the last couple of years when you guys come to the LCA. And thank you so much for your time this morning, Walter. Or, I'm sorry, Gunther.
Thank you very much.
I told myself, I was like, it's Gunther. It's Gunther. Don't mess it up. And then, of course, right at the very end, I'm like, you dummy.
It's fine.
I'm in a difficult situation here. I mean, after all... Nerds.
This Transformer is cool.
Have a great weekend.
See you later, nerds.
The future's stupid, guys. I'm sorry, but it is.
I have spoken.
I hate that was good, Chuck.
Sometimes I'm on. I didn't even do any cocaine today, and I'm doing pretty good at radio.
I'm doing it.
I told you, Tony Khan is not a role model.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.